From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Republican Party has deliberately crafted a strategy to try to win elections by painting their opponents as socialists. When President Donald Trump was accused of using racist language against the squad of four congresswomen of color, his GOP defenders justified his words by claiming that the targets of his vitriol were socialists. Republicans want to make the 2020 election be about freedom versus socialism. Are Democrats capable of responding to these attacks? We turn now to a proud socialist who has not only embraced the label, but lived up to it, won an election, and is now running for re-election. Shama Sawant is a member of Seattle City Council. She was the first socialist to be elected to that body. She's with the Socialist Alternative Party and joins me now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So first, I suppose you aren't surprised looking at this line of attack by Republicans, because for a very long time, the word socialist has been a dirty word in the establishment in Washington, D.C. And now we're seeing a few people who are affiliated with this idea of socialism, who even call themselves socialists, become elected to Congress. And it seems as though it's given Republicans a great opening to say, aha, there's a few Democrats who identify as socialists. We think that's a bad word. We're going to label the whole party this way, and that's going to work in our favor. It's not surprising, right?
It's not surprising at all, as you said correctly, that the Republican Party, especially the extreme right wing in the political spectrum, wants to use the socialism label in as pejorative and negative a way as possible in order to incite people into thinking that somehow socialism is antithetical to an idea of freedom. And so, you know, sort of preparing the ground to polarize the elections in 2020. But I think, you know, this is also a call to action to the Democratic Party. And especially this is a question to the Democratic establishment. Are they going to yet again use the failed strategy of trying to disavow themselves as socialist, as the left? You know, I don't think the Democratic establishment wants anything to do with socialism. But the point is, purely from the point of view of winning an election against Donald Trump, who is a liar, is a con man, has engaged in absolutely despicable measures, especially against the immigrant community, as you can see the horrors of the concentration camps. But the point is, how is the Democratic establishment actually going to fight this? And I would say at this moment, the support for the squad, you know, for left Congress people like Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the support for them is so strong. Millions of people, many of them identifying as rank and file Democrats, some of them are identifying as socialists, some as independent. Millions of people are, working people are supporting these left-leaning council member, Congress members so strongly. So I think the real question is, rather than disavowing and distancing itself from the question of being the left alternative to what Republicans and the, especially the Trump administration represents, can we actually see a momentum, not necessarily towards whether or not the socialism label is accepted? The question is, will we have a real Democratic campaign along the lines of what Bernie Sanders is talking about, where, you know, Bernie Sanders calls himself a socialist and he is running on a fighting program to tax big business, to fully fund public education, to fund universities and student debt, for Medicare for all? These are the program platform points that are extremely popular with a vast majority of Americans. And I think that is the way to really win over millions of people who otherwise, just like in 2016, would be made fodder to a very fake agenda by Donald Trump.
Now, if Democrats try to disavow themselves as socialist, then you would imagine that they would have to essentially say, we're not for Medicare for all, we're not for a $15 an hour minimum wage or any of those things, because essentially the Republicans want to point, you know, the Green New Deal, they want to cast all of these programs as socialist. Whether or not they are is a slightly different discussion. And so if Democrats want to take a stand on anything, it would be a bad idea to try to respond to Republican attacks and say, no, no, we're not socialist, right? I mean, wouldn't that essentially be a losing strategy?
You're absolutely right, Sonali. Any kind of defensive posturing of the kind that you described would be a failing strategy. It has proven to be a failed strategy in the past. And so it's a question of learning from past mistakes. And as you said, you know, different people call themselves socialists and often mean different things. And just to clarify, when I call myself a democratic socialist, I am actually saying that my analysis shows that at the end of the day, the system of capitalism, global capitalism, is not going to serve the needs of humanity, least of all address the question of climate catastrophe, which is at our doorstep right now, and that we need not just reforms, but really a fundamental shift away from capitalism. But within that context, there is absolutely full support across the spectrum. Everybody who considers themselves socialists, including me, are fighting strongly for every reform that you mentioned, like Medicare for All, like far-reaching policy positions on addressing climate change through a new Green New Deal program, meaning concretely putting policies forward that will shift energy away from fossil fuel and carbon emissions towards clean energy. But for all of that, again, you know, as you said, it's not so much about the socialism label, but if you take a defensive posture and play into the hands of the Republican talking points, then what happens is that you distance yourself away from what millions of people are looking for, and indeed what is needed at this moment, given the climate emergency that we are in. And so just to concretely put this forward, you know, we're not talking in abstract notions. If we want to save the planet from what climate scientists have told is decidedly going to be catastrophic results, then it requires, you know, you don't need a genius to understand that, okay, it requires moving away from fossil fuels and carbon emissions to clean energy. But to concretely put that in action, there is no way of doing that without taking on the power and the might of fossil fuel corporations. And this means taking on a battle, political battle, with some of the richest and the most powerful and the most vindictive of the billionaire class. How are we going to do that? That requires a political clarity. Whether you call yourself socialist or not, you require public representatives who have the clarity that in order to achieve that, in order to actually go to battle against big business and fossil fuel billionaires and to win against that, we need mass movement throughout the nation. We need strike actions. We need workers to move into struggle in their millions. And we need those movements to have our own elected representatives who are clear that they're going into office and running their campaigns and going into office not to serve the interests of the billionaire class and throw us a few crumbs along the way, but to take on squarely a battle against big business and understand that the interests of the fossil fuel billionaires are diametrically opposed to the interests of the planet, of sustainability, and of the living standards of the majority. And so I think that putting forward in concrete terms what it means is important, and that is why I really commend elected representatives like Ocasio-Cortez for having made it concrete. What does it mean for me to be a socialist? It means fighting for the Green New Deal for working people.
Right. And I mean, so well, for example, for someone who might be worried that the label will hamper their election chances, couldn't they say, well, if socialism is, you know, supporting Social Security and the Medicare program and wanting that Medicare program to be expanded to all Americans, if that's what socialism is, if socialism is, you know, funding veterans' health care and making sure all Americans get the similar sorts of health care, then fine, I am a socialist and here's what else I want. I mean, one could sort of put it in those terms, because we do have, if socialism really is about the government putting human needs first and funding those directly, then we already do have socialist programs that Republicans and Democrats do support.
It's absolutely true. In fact, what you're saying actually reminds me of what I have personally, and we in Seattle in through our campaigns, have heard ordinary people say. You know, when we run into ordinary people who are struggling for better living standards, who understand that we need to fight against poverty, inequality, climate change, they are very clear that this requires us to get united on the ground against a ruling class that is, you know, that really stands as an obstacle to this kind of progressive change. So ordinary people on the ground don't shy away from the label. In fact, when we ran our first election campaign for city council in 2013, you know, this was 5.5 years ago, 6 years ago. At that time, it was still newer. The word socialism still, you know, people would ask, really, is it wise for you to go around calling yourself socialist? How will you get elected? But at that time, it was the Democratic Party political operatives who were defensive about it. But when I talked to ordinary people on the streets in Seattle, they would say, well, if you're fighting for a $15 minimum wage, if you're fighting for rent control, if you're saying that you're going to only take the average worker's wage and donate the rest of your lavish salary for social movements, and you call yourself a socialist, then, and I support all of what you stand for, then maybe I'm a socialist too. So I think, you know, really, there is no need. First of all, defensive posturing doesn't work. It doesn't. It's not a good strategy. It's a failed strategy. And moreover, I think the Democratic establishment in disavowing all of this is completely out of touch with the on-the-ground reality, which is twofold. One is that millions of people are done with corporate politics. They want to fight. There's a mood of revolt. And then furthermore, polls have shown that especially among younger people, but now among other people as well, the word socialism is no longer carrying any stigma. In fact, socialism is more popular as an idea among young people than capitalism is.
Shama, in your first term, how did you carry out your socialist agenda? And, you know, let's say that with pride, because, of course, Republicans would use the term socialist agenda as something nefarious. But what did your socialist agenda, what did it manifest itself as in the first five years of your first term as city council member?
So when we ran our first campaign for city council in 2013, we used our campaign as a vehicle to begin building a movement for a $15 minimum wage in Seattle, to highlight the question that there was the beginnings of a massive affordable housing and homelessness crisis, which has since gotten worse, and hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit, and the fact that Seattle and Washington State have the most regressive tax system in the entire nation, meaning the poorer you are, you pay more than if you're a wealthy household. If you're wealthy or if you're a big corporation, you pay little to nothing. And all of those were concrete points, meaning it is technically possible to win. But we were very clear when we ran the campaign, that we're not running some sort of messiah who is by themselves going to solve the problems, but instead our message was that, you know, I'm not hiding that I'm a socialist, and this is what socialism means to me, and this is why I am a socialist, and, you know, here's my analysis of why I don't think that the problems of our society can be solved on the basis of capitalism. However, whether we agree on that or not, since we are agreed that we need to raise the minimum wage, we need bold solutions for our affordable housing crisis, we need to address police brutality and racism, let's build a united movement around the concrete demands that we all agree on. So, as a member of Socialist Alternative and Socialist Alternative as an organization as a whole, you know, we have the approach that we have to build the widest and the strongest possible movement on concrete demands, progressive demands, that we can build large unity on. You know, people agree. People agreed that we needed a higher minimum wage. Now, right now, just to give you a similar example, we have launched a massive campaign for rent control in Seattle. And as you can see, everywhere in every metropolitan area, you know, including the Bay Area, including Los Angeles, in New York City, everywhere there is an affordable housing crisis and the demand for rent control is growing. And you saw New York activists won a massive victory in the state legislature. And the poll just came out from California that the vast majority of Californians are demanding stronger rent control protection. So I think there are many concrete issues on which we can build very, very strong unity. But, you know, the bottom line of what I'm describing is that at no point do you go on the defense. You know, the best defense, as they say in sports, the best defense is a good offense. You want to fight against big business and win something, you have to, you know, energize a mass number of people around really strong sort of, you know, going on the offense kind of progressive demands. And I will say, you know, we are not isolated anyway. Look at what happened in Puerto Rico. I mean, just incredible. One third of the population be showing its willingness to go on a general strike to demand that the president, the leader resigns. I mean, this is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we see these sorts of movements in other parts of the world as well, offering a really wonderful and important way forward. And people are quite fed up in Puerto Rico, and people here on the mainland of the United States in many ways are fed up. And I'm wondering also if this idea of, you know, for example, what you were saying with rent control, using direct solutions to solve the crises is something Democrats really need to take a lesson from. Because if you hear a lot of Democrats, when they want to solve, say, problems of gentrification or high skyrocketing rents, they'll talk in terms of, you know, setting aside certain percentages of units to be affordable, or they'll start talking about tax subsidies. There's a lot of indirect means that they rely on that are essentially trickle-down economics to solve crises that could just be solved directly. For example, solving the healthcare crisis using Obamacare. That was a reformist trickle-down solution. Instead of saying, let's just give healthcare to everybody, let's let our tax dollars support it. So in your mind, is a socialist agenda based on direct government solutions to crises rather than going through private solutions, roundabout means that we know don't work?
I think you're getting to the heart of the problems, fundamental contradictions under capitalism, and which is why, as a socialist, I don't believe that these problems can be fully solved on the basis of capitalism. But you can see how demands like rent control actually get to that heart of the problems in capitalism. Meaning, why do we talk about policies like rent control? Because we see, as millions of people facing the brunt of the housing crisis, we see, for example, in Seattle, that there has been a construction boom for the last 10 years. The city is booming. Construction is booming. The city has been the construction crane capital of the nation for the last 4 years running. I mean, you can't walk a few blocks without seeing one of those giant cranes. And yet you have this perversity where more and more rental apartments are being built and going up, and yet more and more working people are being economically evicted from the city because they can't afford the rents that to begin with, and then the rent increases, push them away. And so you're seeing the contradiction that on the one hand, lots of construction is being made, but then on the other hand, very little of that and less of it is affordable to working people. So in other words, it helps you reach the conclusion that the for-profit housing market simply does not work for us. It has failed us as working people simply because the for-profit housing market builds not for affordability, it builds for profits for a few at the top. And who are those few? It's the venture capitalists, it's the big banks, it's the corporate developers, it's the property management corporations, it's a bunch of billionaire sharks at the top, all of whom make untold profits from what? From the rent check you write every month. So every time, if you're watching this and every time you hurt, if you're writing your rent check, know that you're hurting because your rent is making massive profits for some person who's already obscenely rich to begin with. And so that shows people that this is simply not working. And so trying to make a dent here and there doesn't work. We need a bold public policy that enables working people to not be exploited by these sharks anymore. But at the same time, you know, it also explains that rent control by itself will not be enough. It also shows, you know, seeing the failures of the for-profit market also for us, failures for us. They haven't failed the billionaire class. They just failed us. And in fact, it goes to the point about, you know, when people say, well, capitalism is not working well, we need to make it work well. That doesn't mean anything. Capitalism is working great for those who gain from it. But unfortunately, it's a system that helps only a few gain and the rest of us lose. And so It helps you to see that in addition to rent control, what we're also going to need is a massive expansion of what I would call social housing, which is publicly owned affordable housing, meaning no matter what your income is, you pay no more than 25 to 30% of your income in rent if you are occupying that home, publicly owned and permanently affordable home. And so a combination of rent control and social housing expansion will actually make a huge solution towards the housing affordability crisis. But again, this is something that we cannot forget. We cannot just talk about the policy solutions. We have to talk about how can we win this. Actually winning universal rent control free of corporate loopholes and a massive expansion of social housing does actually mean that you take away the opportunity of massive profit making from the hands of the billionaire class. They will still be making profits, but not hand over fist in the way that they're doing right now.
Right, so their profits will be a little bit smaller so the rest of us can have some.
Yes, exactly. And do not believe the lies. We should not believe the lies that, capitalism is not a zero-sum game. It is very much a zero-sum game. So in other words, if we are going to gain, that does mean fewer profits for the billionaire class. So expect that they will fight tooth and nail. And in fact, they will fight viciously against any attempt to win these policies. So in other words, if you want to win any of this, we're going to have to build determined and courageous mass movements. And those movements will need elected representatives who are absolutely loyal to the movements.
Right, and not shy away from this idea of socialism. And very briefly, in the last minute of our conversation, Shyama, I'm wondering if your presence on the Seattle City Council has emboldened people to explore the idea of socialism, not just outside the City Council, but even within the City Council. Do you feel that your presence has given courage to other members of the council to be bolder, to go left, or do they fight you?
I think some of them are outright corporate politicians, and we are very clear that the battle lines are drawn. But I think your question brings up an important point about how do we generate the kind of accountable representation towards movements that I'm talking about, and what makes me so unshakably accountable. You can't just bring it down to moral personal qualities. We have to have a strategy. Movements. Ordinary people have to have a strategy to have accountable leadership. And I would say that unfortunately, most of the progressive representation that we've had on the City Council, even though, in many cases, their heart might be in the right place, it doesn't count for very much as far as outcomes for ordinary people is concerned. Because when you're on the dais, when you're elected and when you're in City Hall or, much worse in US Congress, the pressure to conform to corporate politics and to cut corners and then begin selling out, that pressure, Sonali, I mean, it is intense, palpable, and relentless. And unless your elected representative is clearly rooted in social movements and understand that that's who I'm accountable for, those are the people who have put me here, and if I let them down, I am letting myself down. Unless there is that clear sort of, tying in between elected representative and movement, you don't get that kind of representation. Very quickly, to give you an example, we have lots of progressives on the council, and yet last year, less than a month after we had won the Amazon tax to fund social housing and homeless services, 7 of the 9 council members ended up repealing that tax because they decided that their best strategy was to capitulate to the absolute, vicious threats by Jeff Bezos and the Amazon billionaires. They did that because they don't base themselves in the strength of movements. They feel that, now that business has attacked me, I have no other choice. I have to go along with these corporate politicians. And it is unfortunate that 7 of the 9 council members did this. And so there is never any guarantee that the council members who make promise, elected candidates who make promises and then take elected office are going to stay accountable. And it's a reminder that movements, ordinary people have to get organized, workers in the labor movement have to get organized and demand that kind of accountability and reject this idea that, in my heart, I'm a nice person, but when push comes to shove, I cannot stand with you and I'm going to sell you out. That's not acceptable because these are people's lives we're talking about. And so to generate that kind of representation, it has to start from the grassroots.
Well, certainly great advice for Democrats as they face the labels and the attacks of the Republican Party. Thank you so much, Shama, for joining us. Good luck to you in your re-election effort.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Shama Sawant. She's a member of Seattle City Council. She was the first socialist to be elected to that body some years ago. Affiliated with the Socialist Alternative Party, she's up for re-election. We've been discussing how to respond when the term socialist is weaponized. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.